You mentioned there was another family.
The Curtises. Now, what Mr. Curtis's first name was, I don't know. But there were several girls in the family. Marjorie, Wilhelmina, the one I knew best was Margaret, I think. And Marjorie is the, there was one Bertha, or I didn't know the family so well. Mrs. Curtis, because she was a very close friend of my mother-in-law's. And Marjorie is still living in the old house in which they lived all these years, and it's the house could be still, it's in good condition, but it's like these old houses that they're renovating or remodeling, not remodeling, but returning to its former grandeur on Atlantic Avenue between 8th and 9th. And has two enormous palm trees in the front with flower beds around them, but little steps, and you go into a funny little hall that's called, I think probably was a music room to begin with. It's an interesting little old house. Now, if you think about it, when you pass, now there are apartment houses on either side of it, but
near St. Mary's Hospital, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's out in the block just below St. Mary's Hospital, from 9th to 8th Street, on the west side of the street. So if you happen to be there, you might...
You belong to St. Luke's Episcopal Church, as
well. Well, now, you might know Marjorie. She's very active in the Episcopal Church there. Marjorie Curtis.
Oh, I think I know the name. All right. And she grew up in Arkansas.
Oh, yes. She taught until quite recently. I think there were 5 girls and 1 boy, and the boy was born when the girls were all grown almost. And he is a doctor, and he majored in, and in his field is, that disease of the hands and the
limbs.
No. They dance off and become very horrible looking, and they keep leprosy.
Oh.
And he did quite a lot of research work on that, and so he's in one of the hospitals in New York, because he has become, and I can't remember his first name, but he's a well-known authority,
yes,
on leprosy in New York.
Oh.
And for his first work, as soon as he graduated, he went into that. Now he was at Molokai at one time, and then another leprosy colony in, I think, in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So, Marjorie Curtis would be a very interesting woman to talk to, because some of them were born in California, the girls. Now, you see, that's an interesting thing about Dwight's family. Both his father and mother were born in California.
Oh, yes.
Their parents came, Mrs. Mack's parents came across the plains in 1850, and the oldest daughter was born someplace down in the path, but it was in the spring or the summer sometime, and the Indians attacked the caravan, or they stopped so that when she was delivering the child.
Oh, my.
And then before they got organized to go again, they were attacked by Indians. And they had the circle, you know, and the people that were in, but no one was killed or damaged. I don't know how they scared them off. But and then Dwight's grandfather, McFadgen, came around the horn in a boat, in a ship. And this is kind of interesting. He was a very strong Presbyterian. And he sent for his younger brother, who was a musician. They were born on Prince Rupert Island. And he sent for his brother to come out here. And his brother, it was in the early days, it was before 49, and his brother played and sang in the saloons in San Francisco. And so old grandfather, Dwight's grandfather, went through the courts and changed the name, the spelling of the name, from M-A-C to M-C, McFadden.
Well, there wouldn't be
those relatives of theirs in San Francisco are really blood relatives. Grandfather found that he raised cane, raised wheat and grain, not cane, grain, in the around the Dixon area, and he had. And it was before the railroads were in, and he had his own ships that he sent around and delivered the California grain. And the biggest ranch was at Maine Prairie. I don't know whether Maine Prairie is on the map as a marked now or not. It's in the sloughs of the Sacramento River. And it floods in the spring, and one of the daughters maintained for many years was on an island, and they ran sheep on that island, only they'd take them off in barges to higher ground, and when you'd go into that place, it didn't have steps. It had a step ladder to get up into the place. I don't know how they ever got the stove and the sewing machine and the beds and everything were on hooks from the ceiling because we went up 10 or 12 rungs on the ladder to get into the cabin, the house. And then when they left from the high water came, everything was... They had great big hooks in the ceiling where the beams in the ceiling were, and all the furniture was hooked up to those. But how they ever got it up into the house in the first place, I don't know. Unless they put it in the house and then raised the house on stilts. But Grandfather McFadgen had his own ships and warehouses and things for the grain.
Would that be up around Stockton, or would it be all the way down in San Francisco?
I've been there, but many years ago. It's out from Dixon a ways.
Boats would come all the way up.
Yes, they come up the river,
yeah.
And then into the sloughs.
I see.
And Grandad, McFadgen, was kind of a big shot, apparently. And he, with some of his neighbors, tried to buck the railroad coming in because, you see, the shipping couldn't be. And so they burned down they came in, the Southern Pacific, they feel sure it was, burned down the warehouse and the docks and the whole business. It was a tremendous loss to them. But the old ranch house in the early days of the Pony Express was one of the places where they changed the horses, and they living room that was more like a hall, and the steps were, it was the hotel, and the people stayed overnight, and on the second floor were the rooms around, and they could look down and into this, where the, it was the lobby and the dining room. But that just torn down, I guess it would be about 19, between 1930 and 40. Yeah, I guess the termites got it. But it was an interesting old place, and the furniture was delightful. In fact, there's a, these old ships that used to go through to China. And there's some of the things that they would bring back. I have one of the plates that was something that was brought back at one time from China.
Well, I'm back in London. When were you in the South America?
In 1922. And as I said, Father Red married us, and we were given a home for a wedding present. So on Bennett Avenue out in Long in Belmont Heights. So Dwight at that time was the pharmacist for the Sun Drug Company, which was purchased within a year to 2 years after we were married. Maybe it wasn't as long as 2 years, but he was promoted to manager from just a pharmacist at that time. And in those days, the managers had to be pharmacists. But nowadays, they prefer young men. One of my great nephews majored in business administration, and he was selected to be an assistant manager for Thrifty right after his graduation. So, and we kid him, we ask him if he knows the difference between castor oil and soda water.
I hope he doesn't have to discuss either one. Yes, he tells me that you've been very active.
You're
a big
fisherman and fisher people. Oh, yes.
And
you're active
in the
tuna
club.
So, Bucky, yes. Tell me something about... Oh, yes. Well, Dad, from a time he was still in the grades, was always very enthusiastic about boating. And he saved his money while he was before he got into high school, about the eighth grade, and bought a little sailboat. I think it was probably about 15 footer. And he kept it in a sleeve because Long Beach didn't really have a good place to keep them in those days. And he paid a man 50 cents a month to light a lantern on the mast so it wouldn't be run down by larger ships that were in there. They weren't really ships. They were kind of boats and scows and that sort of thing. So he bought a boat. We were married in 22, and by 29, he'd saved enough to buy a boat, a Stuart Fellows 32-foot. And we fished, and we had acquaintances in Long Beach that were members of the tuna club, and our mooring, when we bought the boat, the mooring came with it, and so we spent every weekend at the island usually we went over maybe the end of April, and we fished and used the boat until November, then it got, but of course we had to quit then because we were both enthusiastic about football, and we always had season tickets, and so we couldn't, the only times that we could use it for the weekend was when the Trojans played someplace else out of Los Angeles. So then we became members of the Long Beach, I mean the Catalina Tuna Club, in about 30, well, it was about the, about 36 or 7, I think, because we had there was a boat that I'd always admired very much, friends of ours at the Tuna Club. This man got into the gold business, gold mining business, and so he sold his boat and his home and all that sort of thing to finance his mine. So we had to tow that boat in one time. It was a Matthews 38, and there was a what they call an air pocket in the gas line. So we towed them in because they couldn't get gas enough to feed their motors. So when this man was selling the boat, he sold it to the man who, Hollywood man, his name was Ford. And he scrambled the name and made it Trophy. So we bought that. Then he directed Gone with the Wind, and then a movie company in London, gave him a very fine offer to come over and direct two plays that they wanted to, two movies that they wanted to make. And then, of course, the war broke out, and that was in 39, and so he didn't go. But he put the boat on the market, and we bought the boat. Then he wanted to buy it back, but didn't sell it. And so that was active in that Tuna Club, and the Tuna Club in Long Beach, Southern California Tuna Club.
Oh, so there are two Tuna Clubs.
Yes, there's the Long Beach Tuna Club, the Southern California Tuna Club, and the granddaddy of all the tuna clubs on the Pacific Coast of Avalon.
Okay.
So Dyke was, I fished 17 years before I caught my first marlin.
No.
But Dyke caught his before I caught mine. But we fished religiously all summer long. We thoroughly enjoyed it. Dyke was the past president of both clubs. He was a Rotarian. But he never, he said he just didn't want to be a president. I don't know whether he was ever asked. I know he was considered at one time, but he said he couldn't afford to do that. I don't know why he couldn't afford to do that, if he could afford to do the other. There wasn't as much expense and entertaining necessary and that sort of thing. But we fished in Mexico several times, and I had all the luck of fishing down there. You see, both clubs would organize a club project, and we'd go down with them and fish. We fished at Mazatlan and one time, and at we didn't ever go to there was always something, help or something in the thing. We never the other place where the ships could go in. These ships go down for a week to
Ensenada.
Not either of those. It's further on down.
Oh, Acapulco.
Acapulco. We visited Oxford a couple of times, and at the market line, and Dad really wasn't physically able. The last time that a group went down to Porto Viejo, but I don't know, some of the family, my nephew and my two nieces and their husbands have boats. So one of the boys had a very much larger one. So a year ago, Christmas, they took the whole month of December off and went down and fished the Gulf of California.
Mm.
Went down, and they had a delightful time. I'm sorry that Dwight wasn't still here to go with them, but those trips were lots of fun, and we did catch fish, and the Pillsbury's are a long-time family here, and the Pillsbury's and ourselves fished together down there at some time.
One of the things that we're studying is the impact of the oil on the Platinum Mortgage. Were you or your family involved at all in any oil leases or oil development?
Well, Dwight had picked out a lot that he thought would be nice for us up on Signal Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And then they began building oil wells around, and he didn't think that, of course, that ruined it as a residential area. So he sold a lot. Whether or not that lot ever had oil or not, I don't know. But we were never involved in any oil at all. Too bad, baby.
Well, one question I always ask everyone is what happened to them during the earthquake of 33?
Oh, well, of course, the Dwight had just come home from the pharmacy, and we had just gotten in the house when it struck. So we went right over to pick up his mother. She was living on Teresa, just off of 7th Street. And in the meantime, his brother Paul was working at the Fortham Pine Owl. So he jumped in his car, and when he got home before Dwight and I got back over there. And so Dwight immediately, when she wasn't there, her place was quite badly messed up. We lost a lot of things, but our house was not damaged except the top three bricks on the fireplace turned, but the other didn't fall off. But Dwight, we took our camping outfit and set up a tent in the backyard and took the mattresses out and put them in. So his mother, well, not that night, but the next day, and it was so silly. Our boat wasn't damaged at all, and we had cooking facilities and all that sort of thing and good bunks, and we never thought about it. He went down to see that it was all right, but we could have lived aboard the boat much more comfortably. But the neighbors, the man who was the man and his that was managing the mortuary for Mrs. Mack, lived down in Belmont Shore. So he and his family came up, and they stayed there, and a couple of the employees with whom we were very friendly came over. And so I used to buy casual coffee from the casual company that delivered them.
Yeah.
And I had bought a 3-pound can that day. And so then some of the men, district managers and so on of the aisle came down to see how things were. Everything was all over the floor at the pharmacy. But Dwight went down the basement. I wouldn't let him go down unless I went with him. And they turned off all the gas and water and the things for the charged water.
Yeah.
Well, there was a lot of stuff in the basement. And so by the time we got home, some of the people were already at the house to see that our house was all right. And I think there were something like 30 people that stayed at the house that night, and we used all 3 pounds of coffee and some that I had left from the previous car. And my mother had sent me I hadn't used yet a big fruit cake. Well, I think with a 5-pounder, well, we ate all of that. And so I never used to buy 2 dozen eggs at a time, but I had that day for some reason. So for breakfast, we made coffee, and then when so many cups would be poured, and then we'd put some eggs in the percolator and boil the eggs. Our electricity. See, with my hearing aid, I never know where the noise comes from. No, well, we didn't build a campfire. The next door neighbor, their fireplace completely fell out. And so they, with the help of other people that were just still around, it stood about this high, a pit, and of the bricks from the fireplace. And then we had large grate from that we used to use it for camping. And so the neighbors and Walt Schubert, his wife worked for Dredd, but he was a skipper on one of the boats. And so he stopped at the shipbuilding place, their ship, the one that he was captain of, at the dock. He gathered up all the small pieces of wood. There was always a lot of stuff like that. And he had the whole back end of the car filled with wood. So we had ample wood every night when it came. They came in, could bring us a load of wood from the shipyard. So Mother had some very close friends. Mrs. Mary Young Moore, the woman who owns the property that the Robinsons is on, and a very wealthy woman from Los Angeles, traded at Young's grocery store in Los Angeles, and she sent down a case of eggs, a ham, the ham and the turkey, a 24-pound turkey, were delivered at my mother's place in Los Angeles, and she cooked them, and then my brother took his wife and their babies. One was only 6 months old, went up and stayed with Mother. So when he came down, he brought the ham and the turkey, and we had eggs, but I think there were a couple of gallons of milk and that sort of stuff that were delivered at the house from Young's during the earthquake. So we had a crowd around until the houses were inspected, so to be sure that the gas, we had no trouble with the gas, but our electricity was not turned off. We had electricity all during immediately. Our house had been built by a man who, there were about a dozen of them around Longby in that area. They were built by the same man, but they were all well built, and we didn't have any trouble, but we moved back into the house about the third day after we'd come the tent in the backyard.
Well, this was right, the earthquake happened right during the Depression. Yes. You remember much about the Depression in Long Beach and how it affected people?
I traded a little, there was a store about 2 blocks from the house, Belmont and Broadway, and the man who ran the meat department was one of the sons of friends of the McFadden family. So we were able to get meat and that sort of thing, and we were not without anything. And we had a ham and a turkey, but I bought a large piece of beef, and I had a great big bucket. I don't know how in the world I ever got it or why I ever got it. If it had anything in it, I couldn't lift it. It was so big. But I kept stew and soup going all the time.
on this. I had plenty of wood, and I wasn't worried about running out. Mm-hmm. So, but, you know, a lot of people didn't have things, and so I'd use a package of pancake flour on breakfast, because many of the employees lived not too far away from us, and so they all came and they had their breakfast at our... See, they didn't open the stores for several days, mm-hmm. but they would go down and they had to clean out all this glass and dust that, you know, was spilled.
Yeah.
And so that I cooked breakfast. I had usually 15 to 25 every morning for breakfast mm-hmm. at the house.
Mm-hmm.
And we had two great big griddles that I could put on about 8 on one and 10 or 12 on the other. And I could just...